views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
I've been representing all my life. I'm getting ready to make it count this time. Since it's 2021 for your family line, you better get ready. It's about that time. So tell mama to be ready. Tell it to the whole family. The rocks are 242. The count depends on you. So tell Tita, go tell Bella. Mark it down on your calendar. Since it's 2021, this one's for everyone.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Yawning this morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You are on the clock with Erin Green and it is Wednesday the 27th of October 2021. On the clock we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development and emerging social and consumer. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. Well, good yawning this morning. I was asking my producer to find this track. It's a track I wrote years ago when I was in primary school. I think I must have entered in the competition. It became a national hit, except for one thing. I cited the guys who made this song. They changed the lyrics fundamentally, right? I know them. I bet you they're from Andrus, my people, right? But I write this song, it's called Church Out, Pears Dropping, right? At my young age, I knew it was going to be a classic. Somehow, these Andrus people just change up the lyrics and things. I mean, the song sound good, you know. The song sound good. It just wasn't as good as it was when I wrote it and sang it in third grade, right? Back in Cargill Creek Primary School. Anyway, good morning, Bahamas. Welcome. Today, we're talking agriculture. I'll tell you why I want to talk all kinds of things today. As you can see, the news is hot. But let me say this. As an advocate, human rights, intersectional human rights advocate, what I did in my work was I sort of you take a step back and you speak up when you realize that there is an important issue that nobody else sees or nobody else is willing to address, right? You see, like with this police brutality issue, I'm not pleased about anything in the situation, but it is good to see that this conversation has reached a national level, right? And that multiple sectors of society are talking about this issue. As we see, unfortunately, it took press, right, for us to have this conversation, but I'm glad that we're having it, right? That's the most important part. I will say this, though. We got a big class issue going on here. See, because if you're in a certain class, you never see these issues, right? They don't really affect you because you don't really interact with the police, right? I can say, like, as simple as where I live, I live in what people would call a bougie or affluent neighborhood right next to a more economically depressed area, right? The neighborhood is beautiful, mind you. The neighborhood is wonderful. A mixture of walking community and cars and traffic. I want to say to y'all drivers, though, don't forget, it was always a walking community. Before there was cars, there was feet, right? So y'all slow your car down. Anyway, so like even though there may be a lot of incidents going on in that neighborhood next to us, we rarely see the police, right? And so this is something that bougie people and upper class people and upper middle class people, we don't deal with. We don't understand what people are so upset about. That's the police's job. But as you delve into it, right? you delve into it and you listen to the lived experiences of people, you realize that this is deeper than one or two incidents. We have a culture of dysfunction in the police force. And the dysfunction is simple, right? It is, who does the police force serve? What is your function? Is it to protect and serve the citizens, or is it to protect the resources of a particular sector of society, resources and assets and property, or is it to keep the citizens in line, right? That's what we have to talk about and figure out, because this ain't the first discussion about police brutality. And I can say this on behalf of all young men that may have had this horrific and terrific, right, that terror-filled experience in their lives. I have only heard anecdotally about the jitney and the Adelaide run and picking up young black boys off the inner city roads and taking them to the outskirts of New Providence and beating them and terrorizing them. Right? It's not the first time we're having these conversations, Bahamas. And if you want to know what's wrong with your people, like every time I see somebody do something foolish, like run a stop sign in front of the hospital, knowing 1% of the people in the country can no longer afford proper medical care because of the pandemic, right? What is going through your mind? But then I remember the large majority of us, all of us grew up on the plantation, but for the majority of us, there was no escaping it. There's no escapism, there's no toys, there's no books, there's no travel. And they're treated like plantation denizens. I mean, like, they're treated like Negroes and enslaved people. We refuse to recognize the trauma that our people have lived through, the trauma that we meet out on them ourselves. And so while we have this conversation about police brutality, I want us to examine the extent to which we as individuals and as a collective, as families, as communities, have determined that some people warrant this type of behavior, have determined that some people deserve to be terrorized and treated in this way, right? And let's not forget, it ain't just the poor black people. As a queer woman in this town, people have let me know to my face, why are you expecting anything different given the choices that you've made, you know? So even though I'm a little bougie, went to QC, Bahamian, that lives a wonderfully privileged life, right? I still sitting here wondering how the police could come to my house and tell me that Batelco tell them the threat was not sufficient to warrant further investigation. See, this thing is go in all different directions and impacts all different classes and operates in all different kinds of ways. Imagine the women who thought that them was rich, right? And so they could afford justice to go to the police and to be told that, no, ma'am, if you want to go further with this case, if you want us to take you seriously, you have to come into this in police room with the accused so he could stare you in your face and ask you what you're talking about. You know, this is a domestic violence month. We've been talking about the various forms of domestic violence and how it operates, right? And in the same way, police brutality and state violence operate in many different ways. And I see all the phone line is lit up. I told you all they're talking about food, man. That's my bad, because I brought up a heavy subject. But let me tease you. I know you're calling to talk about this, but do you want to hear about why monkey tamarind does itch? That's the most exciting thing. Anyway, I'm going to get to the calls and then take these three calls, read a couple of texts. Then we're going to get into the show because we got a lot to talk about today. It is agriculture time. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Can I waste along with you here in Pretty Agrin?
Good morning. But look here, it's Obed, it's Obed time.
Two things I want to say, right?
Yeah.
Now, you talked about the violence that are in our country, right?
Yeah.
Let me show you something.
Uh-huh.
Government contributes to it because what they allow, that for a lot of illegal people to come into our neighborhoods, and then people having children for them, and it's creating a big problem. And those there, it establishing a violent community.
Absolutely.
Okay, that's one of the problems.
Okay, quickly. Yeah, yeah.
Say it again.
No, I say, okay, go on.
And that's the problem. And what I want to say to you all also, you two are a nice person to make a good wife to be talking about queer.
Man, listen, I think that is slightly inappropriate for the radio. Second of all, it's just all bare time. Don't be talking them kind of things. The next thing I know, the ancestors praying for me too. Anyway, thank you, Raymond.
I want you to go to heaven with me. I work with the ancestors.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that position. Thank you, Raymond. I got to go.
Thank you.
I want to respond to what Raymond said.
Bye.
First, you guys hang up the phone for me to respond to Raymond. The first thing is this. I identified as queer, as a queer person, I appreciate the sentiment. I can say not everybody appreciates that, Raymond, and you can't run that line on everybody, right? But at the end of the day, most people are saying, hey, I want you to be in heaven with me when I ascend, right? Like, I want you to do things so we could be together. And people could appreciate that sentiment versus, oh, you're going to hell because you refuse to do what I think is right. Anyway, I'd say that. The second thing is this. It's not the illegals that are causing the problem, Bremen. It's unregulated migration. Because here's what comes with unregulated migration. Children need to know who they are, where they are, and where they belong. And a part of where they belong is where they are born and raised. The inability to do those things with certainty, but more importantly, to expect young people to figure those things out in silos in the midst of dysfunctional communities that can't figure it out themselves is traumatic. And that's what causes dysfunction and violence in our communities. Everybody have a daddy. Everybody deserve to know their daddy. You know why? Because your ancestry and your lineage is a part of your identity and self. That is why. It don't have anything to do with because they Haitian and they come here illegally. We create systems that allow people to stay connected to who they are.
And unfortunately, we have a situation where the system is, a lot of these adults, they don't like to be seen as wrong.
Yeah.
So when they're in a position of authority or anything like that, and you're being deemed or you're being videotaped or recorded as doing something wrong, now you're going to go against the person that is about to exploit you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a part of the system right there too. I don't think it's really about children being born here and all that.
Uh-uh. No. It's about the exploitation, the trauma, and the violence mm-hmm. that takes place and occurs regularly in unregulated and dysfunctional systems. Mm-hmm. That's where the violence sits. I got one more caller. Caller, you're on the clock. Good morning.
Morning, Aaron.
Hey, how you do?
And that's you have a guest in there?
Yes, my guest today I'm going to introduce in a moment.
And good morning to the gentleman and good morning to the wider community. And I hope that everybody in this country who waked up this morning has something hard on their chest.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Green, listen to me. And I can say this and we can be real with it.
Mm-hmm.
We continue to kick the ball. I wouldn't even say the can. I call it a ball down the street about the crime and police and some of these individuals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Green, many times I end up in roadblocks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And police officers came, you know, they ask, some even, the majority of the time they even search my car. Is the way, okay, when you're in a hostile situation, this is what I've learned of dealing with children. When you're in a hostile situation, you got to take 5 seconds to think, especially when you're going to express your words.
Mm-hmm.
But some of us, as Bahamian people, we don't think, you know. We think after the fact, not apples, but you still have some good, very good, excellent police officers.
Yep.
And this morning, I listened to Dwight's show, and I listened to some texters when they talk about the Minister of National Security, Mr. Monroe. We should be glad you have someone who's speaking out, who's going to come to the media, who ain't a duck and run and hide or run through the back door like others did before, who's going to bring... Remember now, Ms. Green, Mr. Monroe was on the other side of the fence. And when I say the other side of the fence, he is a noted attorney and a QC. He went many times. He went to police stations or wherever they is to see his clients and maybe abusive or abusers on their bodies. So now that he's here and he's speaking about the injustice whilst he was a QC, I don't see why people complaining. They should welcome this.
Yeah, they just
because we finally have a minister of national security, right, who ain't asleep, nothing need the rug.
Well, let's say that this is what we hope, and the signs that have manifested so far have suggested that.
Great, right. And kudos to him. And yes. And trust me, kudos to him, because I can tell you one thing: if people know Mr. Monroe the way I know him, trust me, he can speak out.
Thank you.
Who get mad? Well, it's our people who get mad for him speaking out for right. Well, then such is life. But we need people in our government to speak out in every aspect, and especially in this government department, of wrongdoing.
Thank you.
Ms. Green, we cannot continue in this country.
Thank you,
I don't care who the government is, to accept every day as wrongdoing.
Thank you, DeWitt. I got to go. But thank you very much. I really appreciate that point that you're making, right? And it's important for the political class to understand that's the expectation, of, particularly when leaders, individuals on the cutting edge of their profession or industry take the helm by being appointed as a cabinet minister or joining the government. We have this expectation that you're not just focused on, we call policy, but you're also focused on people and rights. Anyway, you hear that music. That means it's my break. We're going to take this break. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to bring in my guest. And you're finally going to find out why Monkey Tamarin does itch. Stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. We'll be right back.
Here we go. J.S. Johnson Insurance agents are the best. Reliable service, we've been on the scene, protecting since 1919. J.S. Johnson Insurance has the best. Always. You're always covering me. J.S.J. S. Johnson Insurance. Peace of mind.
I've been representing all my life. I'm getting ready to make it count this time. Since it's 2021 for your family line, you better get ready. It's about that time. So tell mama to be ready. Tell it to the whole family. The one that's 242, the count depends on you. So tell Teddy, go tell below. Mark it down on your calendar. Since it's 2021, this one's for everyone.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Twelve andros in one church on the hill, church packed with brethren, dressed down to kill. Rev just started sermon, but before he get in the groove, Sister Brown look out the window and spot crab on the move. She ball on church out, crab crawling, church out, crab crawling. Cut your sermon short, Rev, quick say amen.
Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You are on the clock with Aaron Green, and this morning my guest in studio is Mr. Phil Davis Jr. And we are talking agriculture. In fact, I got some info to share with y'all about the pears and why they dropping and why they not dropping. But before we get there, I promise y'all I was going to tell y'all why Monkey Tamarin does itch. And my guest today told me that he did his own research to see what I was researching, because he don't trust my Chichani research. He goes into the soil and he does his research himself by hand. Good morning, Mr. Phil Davis Jr. How you do?
Top of the morning. Thanks for having me back again. Eh?
Absolutely. Well, listen, it's planting time. It's beginning of the peak winter season. It's also October, which is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We're right at the end. So today we're talking foods that heal, The best things to grow at the beginning of the grow season and other agriculture tidbits. So let's get to why monkey tamarind does itch. Now, I was convinced all my life that monkey tamarind does itch because you in the bush doing foolishness. And this is God telling you, you get catch.
Yep.
And that's why monkey tamarind does itch. But that is not necessarily the correct answer. I mean, like, that's the answer that give you one extra point on the exam, but that's not the correct answer. What has shown me, and I can tell you all why monkey tamarind is itch, because it turns out that monkey tamarind may be smarter than the average Bahamian. So, monkey tamarind is brown and fuzzy. When the wind blows, or you get too close to it and you rub up on it, itching will start happening. And it's almost like fiberglass. Itching, when you make contact with fiberglass, it's very, very hard to get this itching to stop. So, here's why monkey tamarind itches. But before monkey tamarind becomes monkey tamarind, it's green and it's known as the velvet bean. Now, for a couple of decades now, people who suffer from nerve and muscular degenerative diseases that have been unable to find cures, comfort, release from pain, have been experimenting with the velvet bean. And I'd say over the last, it's got to be about 40 years, but over the last 20 years, the research has ramped up, and over the last 10 years, it's certainly ramped up. And so we found that people have gone from sort of, I wouldn't say anecdotal, but home-based experimentation with the bean to now more scientific institutions are doing solid research on the velvet bean. So like a Bahamian, see, Bahamian know you gotta peep some and you gotta keep some. Bahamian know information is valuable.
Yep.
So valuable that sometimes you may have to keep it. Now, unlike Aaron Green, who like to give it away like a magic penny. So the velvet bean say, listen, I am so valuable, I am so powerful, that I have to make sure that I reap, what's the proper word, my farmer friend? Propagate, and I maintain my presence on the planet. How do I make sure that these humans don't eat me out of existence?
Exactly.
So when the plant is ready to drop its seed to bear again, it makes itself an irritant, so you stay away from it and you will not pick it at this time when it will replant itself.
Yep.
And that is why monkey tamarind does itch.
Absolutely correct. Plants are a lot smarter than us. It's a self-defense mechanism.
Yeah.
Yep.
Much smarter than us.
Yep.
I say all my life, I hear story, and see, but here's the thing is, because all of the stories are attached to stories about things that the person should not have been doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was in the bush smoking some of that devil's lettuce. I was sneaking, let's say, Avi says, on a ghost move way down by Sally Sue. Nobody tell me the monkey tamarind was gonna do the do.
Boy.
So we don't really talk about it.
Exactly, but like you were talking about.
Pull the mic closer.
Sorry about that. Yeah. Like you were talking about the velvet bean, I found out that it's also high levels of testosterone. So it's excellent to boost those levels for men and stuff like that as well. And it's also aphrodisiac.
This is why, and particularly in the Bahamas, I would like to thank the ancestors for protecting us Bahamian women, because that would be horrible. Bahamian men already have the wit. They already have the voice. They sing like song, like angels from heaven. They don't need any more help.
Yep. And if people didn't know, it's an ingredient in steroids.
Yep. Velvet bean.
Velvet bean.
Is an ingredient in the steroids that we are prescribed, like maybe after we break our foot or even COVID-19 treatments.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
An anti-inflammatory treatment.
Exactly.
And we are all beginning to understand how important anti-inflammatories are in reducing inflammation in the body, as inflammation and mucus may be the root of all disease.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's glucosinolates. So that's a part of the ingredients inside these vegetables. Once consumed, it turns into anti-inflammatory agents. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Now, this is another important point I want to make, right? So here I am, I come on the radio with some little anecdotal evidence, some things I heard and then I'd seen. But it's important for us to back this up, right, with scientific research and data. Because we have 21-gun salute. That's what I call an anecdotal remedy, therapeutic. But some big pharmaceutical out there has Viagra. And that's a real money-making, patent-holding therapeutic. Now imagine, as far as I am concerned, I am almost certain that that original recipe from Viagra came from the Bahamas. You know? But that's why it's important for us to not just talk it. Like I had to tell somebody yesterday, it's just a little intellectual slapping up. But we need to take these conversations and this data and invest in ourselves by creating the technical institutions to both show and extract the value from the things that we have locally. So I got a text here. It says, how could we make agriculture popular to the young people? Because it's known as a Haitian job, but there is obviously a lot of money in agriculture.
Well, the first thing I would say is that it's a Haitian trade or anything like that. When we're looking at agriculture or growing things, you need to start looking at nutrient base versus calorie base. So when you're growing your stuff, you can be a novice farmer, a backyard farmer, a commercial farmer. Once you are consuming your vegetables pretty much at the rawest state or blanched or cooked within 2 days of harvesting it, you're now receiving most of your nutrients. So if you're looking down on this craft or this job as something beneath you, you're receiving and you're giving yourself the best possible nutrients in your body. And then the other wellness side of it, you're connecting back with a source of energy, Mother Earth. So you're outside with Mother Earth, you're connecting with her, you're in touch with the sun, getting the positive energy, being grounded by the negative energy into the earth. It's absolute wellness. So we need to get away from this stigma that that it's only for a Haitian or somebody who's immigrant to the country.
And also for me, though, I also am careful to not just paint it as a high money earner, because local agriculture is important at a national security level.
Correct.
As far as I'm concerned, if you're growing food and the average person in your country can't afford it, why are you growing food? We need to begin to, I want to say, commit to growing food that people can afford.
Correct.
And that's possible. We can grow the fanciest things at a cost, you know? Anyway, I see you got a caller on the line. Let's get to this caller. Caller, you're on the clock.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Ms. Green. How you doing?
Good, thank you.
And you and the guest.
Hey, Sparky.
I hope you can give me a moment here without cutting my voice.
But listen, Sparky, we're talking agriculture today.
I know. That's why I say, and some of the stigmas that you're talking about, I think we speak in those stigmas into people's brains that it's not really there. Because when we were growing up, most of the vegetables that we ate from the market down Bay Street, from when we started bringing things in from the, I used to call it the out islands, everything was grown right there. Sidney Poitier's parents used to ship tomatoes to the United States. We used to sell tomatoes and lemons and everything to the United States. Florida became the citrus capital of the world. And we used to do things right here. And we didn't depend on no Haitians then. Those people in Long Island, they Lutra, and they were fishermen and farmers. They had every morning, they get up in the morning, they used to take the young man with them to the farm first before they went to school. They used to walk miles with the goats and the sheep and tie them out the pasture, bring home the tomatoes or whatever was ready to come home. We was doing it long time ago.
So, Sparky, let me ask you a question. What changed?
The black people came to power.
Okay.
And we don't have to do that no more.
It was more global than that. After the 70s, the farmers inside the United States subsidized, so their product became cheaper. And then our...
Sparky.
...can be lawyers and doctors and everything.
Pause Sparky for a second. This is the guess.
Yeah, it somewhat. After in the 70s, the farmers inside the United States were being subsidized. So it was easier for them to grow, and their prices on their products were a lot lower. Then they started making finished products, like all the orange juices and stuff like that. You started getting into all the concentrates. So most of the vegetables and fruits that we were growing in the Bahamas became more and more expensive, and they became less desired, all right? So that's exactly what happened. It was a switch. It was a switch in the minds and the efforts and everything like that.
I call it the advent of the food store culture.
Correct.
And the food store culture, because of its, I'm going to say, the food store culture, because of its connection to a global North culture, right, was just more powerful than this local culture. The bigger culture always consumes the smaller culture. But we've been so consumed, pun intended, by this food store culture that we're lost now.
Yes.
We don't know. In fact, I had this encounter with a young lady that told me that my hairy mango lemonade tasted fake. It didn't taste like real mango. And so I asked her, so tell me, what does real mango taste like? And she told me it tastes like Snapple.
Yeah.
And so then I explained to her, first of all, can't taste like, because that's a different type of food. And
sweeteners.
Yeah. And so, you know, and we had this conversation, but I realized the risk that we are at in, at a national security level. I know people don't see culture and intersecting with national security, but we have young people that don't know what a local hairy mango is supposed to taste like. They can't tell you whether the mango they bought at the market is local or imported. They can't look at it and tell you and distinguish between the two, and they can't taste it and distinguish between the two. And that's a big thing. But so, but Sparky, what I'm interested in is where was the gap? Because as a churin, I was getting 50 cents $0.50 a day to go to school with, if I was lucky, up until 11th grade. I wasn't in charge of what I was putting in my body. How did these things change?
Hello, Miss Green.
Yeah.
I was talking a little while ago. See, y'all had the buttons there to cut me before I finished saying.
No, man, Sparky, I asked you to pause so I could ask you a question.
No,
because I'm very interested in your institutional capacity as an elder in our community. But that don't mean I can just let you come on and have a lecture. I want to ask you questions that are raised by the things that you say to grow the conversation, not just to give you a space for an exposition or an essay.
Yeah, but listen, what I'm saying is, if you're going to do that to me, then when I go to answer you or something like that, then I'm cut. When I'm cut, then I never even get ready to answer you. I am saying what a young guest is saying is a lot of the change in our made stuff expensive here because it costs more to grow it here. After the Super Bowl, you started ordering in bulk from farms in the United States with mass grow things all year round, even when they're supposed to be out of the growing season, because
correct.
They're using all kind of chemicals into the foods to feed us, and we don't even know what we're eating. And all of a sudden, we got a mass influx of cancerous people and sick people in our country because we don't even know what we're eating.
Right on the head, Sparky.
We don't know what we're ordering. We just know we're ordering one tomato at 2 cents for one tomato, and we could sell it for $1. The people that own the stores only took it at the bottom line and profit. They don't care how much people they make sick.
Okay, thank you, Sparky.
Yes.
Thank you, Sparky. That's a wonderful contribution. Thank you.
He was on point and talking about cancer and stuff like that.
Yeah.
This is still Cancer Awareness Month.
Right, and we want to talk about foods that heal.
Yes, and that's we can go into the foods that actually cause it too.
Yeah.
So that's subsidizing of the farmers inside the United States and elsewhere. They had an abundance of products, so they needed to make finished products. So you started getting all of your canned juices and all your potato chips and stuff like that. What ended up happening was the process and the way that they were making these stuff. Introduction of heat and cooking of these the juice. They were saying that your mango juice didn't taste the same. That's because the one that you're getting in a can has so much corn syrup inside of it. It's got salt inside of it. So the first two flavors or the taste that you get inside your mouth is sweet. So they're going to touch that first with a lot of sugar, and then you're going to get your salt. So once you go to those two, you don't need anything else inside your flavor profile.
Yeah.
So That's what's happening. So when they're cooking, up these juices, they have to introduce a lot of heat to them to bring out some of its natural sugars, but they also add in other sugars to them.
Yeah.
But the heat process that they're doing to these products, that's actually causing the cancer cells and stuff to come into our body.
Is it because they're killing the nutrients in the food?
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. The high heat. Because normally when you're cooking, even with red meats, they're adding carcinogens into your body. So.
Man, listen, you know, my nemesis is the smoke coming off the jerk grill.
Mm-hmm.
I can't drive in an area if the grill is on because my vegetarian self is just be hurt in the car. Look, I got a couple of texts here. Morning, are we serious about agriculture? We went away from plantation mentality. The plantation used to keep the country fed and prosperous. I mean, I want to interrogate that and get into the nuances, right? It kept the plantation owners fed and prosperous and
yes.
gave you the illusion that you too were fed and prosperous. Mm-hmm. We decided we were better than that, but we fooled ourselves that we don't need plantation. No, we fooled ourselves that we don't need planting. Some of y'all fool yourself that you don't need planting. You can't be a Caribbean African if you don't need planting. In fact, my European descent Bahamians... planting is it. That's the thing.
Yeah.
But we don't need planting. I changed that text up. Now we importing food we used to grow. Agriculture is serious business. It is very, very serious business. Thank you, texter. Another text. Good morning, Aaron. Have you seen the movie Smile Orange? Monkey Tamarin is featured in that movie. No, I didn't know. I can check it out. Another text, Miss Green, they pick up the garbage this morning in cool air. Thank you. Thank you very much to whoever is responsible for that. And this texter thanks you very, very much. And know that the members of the community thank you very much. Not the raccoons, but the rest. They thank you. Another text, great show as usual. Super value prices are going up.
Yep, 8 to 10%.
So a lot of us will be farming soon. And I, before that, did some tips along with my guests on how to grow without land. And then this text is asked if we've heard about this culture or synthetic meat.
Yes.
And that there are businesses that are pushing synthetic meat. But this person says... they find that incredibly messed up because synthetic meat will have no nutritional value and will possibly be cancerous. Well, for me, it'll have some nutritional value because they can put the nutritional value in it. The question is, are you better off getting that quote-unquote nutritional value from a natural source versus an unnatural source?
Yep. Unfortunately, with those meats, they use something called xanthan gum to hold the meat together, and it's actually made from a fungus. So that adds cancer to your body as well.
Xanthan gum. My man, xanthan I didn't gum. Know that's what xanthan gum was made from.
Yep.
Because that's in like everything we eat.
Yes, ma'am.
Wow. Okay. So I was talking about avocado briefly, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is what it's avocado season. We're almost at the end. I'm going to give you all a little tip. Don't listen too hard. I don't want you all sharing this with anybody. Please go share this with your avocado tree, right? Here's the thing about avocado. Avocado will sit on your tree full until it comes off the tree. It will not get ripe until it comes off the tree.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what our problem has been? The wind.
Or Mickey and Minnie.
Man, listen, don't call Mr. Reginald Raccoon and family Mickey and Minnie. The rats, the raccoons, and the wind, right?
Mm-hmm.
These are the things that are causing your pear to drop off your tree. Your pear will sit on the tree until you pick it. In the right conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So technically, you could do the Bahamian public a service by cultivating your trees and your picking and keeping your pears on the tree longer. Now, mind you, there are so many pear varieties in the world that we could, with cultivation, have pears every month.
Yeah.
Just like mangoes. We could have mangoes every month if we cultivated the right varieties. Also, pears have good fats.
Yes.
As well as bad fats.
The good saturated fats. That
right.
is absolutely correct.
So brain. I tell people, oh, go on.
Brain food. Yeah. So you need those saturated fats or those lipids to add the transmission into your brain. So it keeps you at a good level.
Right. Rotting or spoiling pears mm-hmm. are perfect for cosmetologists and people who perform or provide facials.
Yes.
Please, one of the highest end facials is made with overripe avocado.
Or if you don't want to use it on your face, you can make fertilizer.
Absolutely. I thought you was going to say put it on your foot.
No. So fertilizer mine. I'm all about putting the nutrients back into the plant. So you have all your sources of potassium and everything that you need for your plants. You can get that directly from the actual rotten vegetable too.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I saw a picture this week of somebody who had, it was the saddest picture ever. It was a big avocado sitting in a big man hand and they cut it open and the avocado was 90% seed. And only 10% flesh, and the person is so sad. But then I thought to myself, no, this is a good thing, because those types of avocados are cultivated for the seed to make avocado oil by pressing the seed in avocado butter.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you can also grind down the seed as well and use it in cookings too. Yep. Has other medicinal properties for it as well.
Like a fat, like the oil that I'm going to cook my food in?
Uh-huh.
This is awesome. This time I only be putting avocado in cookies.
Man.
I'm putting them in cold avocado pie, cold vanilla pie, key lime pie. That's what I be doing with mine. But yeah.
You make your butters and stuff too?
Yeah, every once in a while. This is awesome. But I wanted people to know, right, that pear ain't just good for pear and bread and pear and grits and pear and rice and pear and coleslaw and pear and... fried chicken with coleslaw and macaroni and peas and grits and pear. And like, there's all kinds of other things that we could be doing with pear as well.
And pear is also in the top 10 vegetables or foods that you eat to fight cancer.
Wow, this is awesome. This is awesome. So in case you're wondering why when it's pear season, there's always a million pears, because you're supposed to eat pear till you stall.
Yep.
When you stall on pear, your body is telling you you've had enough. Until then, eat pear. And know, even, you see, with this food store culture, you could import pear all year round, but know that you should eat pear in pear season. Mm-hmm. You could have it when you want, but you really should eat it in pear season. And I imagine what the pear is doing, especially for us in the Bahamas, further away from the equator than our other Caribbean brothers and sisters, is preparing us for this winter chill by giving us some good fats.
Storing up on them, yep.
Absolutely. Okay, I got a couple of more texts here. Yes, dear text. I'm not reading that text. Person says, here too, I had a good deep conditioner with the last avocado I had. And we know Bahamian women love their hair, and Bahamian Rastas love and revere their locks, right? And we have all the tools we need to take care of ourselves right there. So let's get quickly to growing, preparing your winter garden, and growing without land. So as y'all can see, the temperature's changing, the air's getting cooler, and this is the beginning of what we call our peak season, growing season, or our winter season, where we're gonna ask you, what's the first thing I need to do to my land to prepare it for growing?
All right, just make sure you have a container or something like that that'll hold in your soil, or if you're gonna grow without soil and just water, make sure your containers don't have any chemicals or stuff like that in them, or you properly wash them out. Put the holes at the bottom, make sure that they're ventilated and they have proper drainage. You don't want a situation where it becomes anaerobic. That just means that the roots can't breathe, that they're stuck inside water. Basically, you want to make sure that any seed that you have, rule of thumb that I do, you use your finger, you go up to your first knuckle or up to the top of your fingernail, indent the hole inside the soil, put your seed inside of it, and you can start to move from there. Most seeds are going to germinate within 3 to 7 days. Mm-hmm. So you, once you're starting in the container or cup or anything like that, that's the time that I tell people that they can prepare the space in their yard. So
get your seeds started first.
Start your seed first.
Yeah.
That way you're not going to waste any time. Because a lot of the time, like when I started off, I put the seeds directly in the ground. Some were too deep. And then I realized that birds and other things come and start to get your seeds. And when you're watering the ground, you think you're watering your seed sections. Ain't nothing inside there anymore.
Yeah.
Especially if you got chickens around your area and stuff, they will find any seed that you put in the ground.
Imperial pigeon? Mm-hmm. Talking about you, imperial pigeon.
So if you start your seed inside a container and you can put those into the shade or partial shade and then acclimate them into the sun. But like I say, you have 3 to 7 days for that seed to germinate. And then you have another week or two before the seedling actually gives its true leaves. That's when you transplant it. So realistically, you've got 2 to 3 weeks before you can transplant those seedlings into the ground. So you can prepare the area. Going back to preparing, make sure that it'll be able to get the chlorophyll going on, and that goes from the rays of the sun. Make sure that it has enough oxygen, so it's not going to be inside of an area where there's a lot of plants around it. So the air has to be able to flow through. The other thing, make sure you don't have the curry soil into your ground. You're going to have to make some amendments. If your soil is too thick, meaning that you can't stick your finger into it loosely, that it goes straight through, that means that your roots really can't spread that evenly. So you're going to have a dwarf plant. So what you can do is a pot. You can get a pot size that you want. Dig out the hole into the ground, amend the soil. You can put in perlites, peat moss, seaweed, any other things like that.
But with seaweed, remember to rinse.
Dry it out. That's correct.
Rinse dry several times.
That is correct. And once your soil is loose enough, rule of thumb, do it twice of the size of the root ball that's going to grow. Normally about 8 inches to a foot wide and about a foot deep is the hole that you want to amend the soil that your seedling is going into. After that, just make sure that when you're watering it, don't water the leaves because our sun might burn it up. But these winter months are coming up, so we're going to get things into the ground like our kales, our lettuces. Mm-hmm. This is definite cabbage season right now. Personally, I stick closer to the cruciferous vegetables. Mm-hmm. So these are the things that are going to give you the most of your nutrients. These are the things that you want to consume at its rawest state or put inside your smoothies and salads and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Once you're consuming these at a raw state or close to that, man, you're going to be absolutely healthy.
Right. And cruciferous means four leaves?
Cruciferous means the four-petal flower.
Okay, four-petal flower.
That's right. It gives the cruciferous vegetables, why I promote these, they germinate within 3 days. That's the rule of thumb. Cruciferous, it's the parable story of Christ, buried in and comes back within the third day. And then the nutritional value of these vegetables, these can be grown year-round in our climate, zone 11. So, and once these are planted, and you're looking at a food shortage, less is more. So once we're growing these vegetables and we're getting the full amount of nutrients from in our yard, you're going to find out that you're not going to be eating a huge plate of food. Your joints are going to be less swollen. You're going to have less inflammatory inside your body. You're just going to feel real rejuvenated off of these cruciferous vegetables.
Listen, absolutely. I got some texts here, four texts, but let me go through quickly growing without land.
Yes.
But first, with the cruciferous vegetables and eating local, here's why eating local is so vitally important. Because when you eat local, you reduce the amount of time between harvest and consumption. And in that first week is when you have the bulk of the nutrients. And when you get 1 week away from harvest, then you begin exponentially losing nutrients.
Correct.
So if you could walk in your garden and pick a green bean and chomp it or take it and stay away, you're getting the maximum amount of nutrients from
correct.
That, as opposed to waiting to purchase a green bean that has been harvested and in shipment now for 6 weeks.
Exactly.
7 weeks. All right. So growing without land. I got three tips I share.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to grow little things like lettuces, things with roots that you cut off, I get a shoebox.
Yep.
I fill it with soil, maybe put a little plastic and then holes right through it, and a shoebox, cut off 1 to 2 inches of the root, plant it. The reason you use a shoebox is you can move a shoebox from windowsill to windowsill. You can chase the light, or you can chase the shadow mm-hmm. of the light, protecting your delicate leaves from over sun exposure.
Wilting, yeah.
Right, and it's the mobility of the shoebox. The second is this: take a gallon bottle or of water or bleach. Cut it in half. Now you have two planters.
That's correct.
Get two hangers. Make two small holes on the side of each planter.
Or when you get that water bottle or the bleach bottle, when you cut the top, especially if it has the top that's thinning down, you actually use the bottom as the watering tray. So you plant in the top and it self-waters from the bottom. So you have
So you connect the two. So
correct.
All right. So you sit the top upside down in the bottom.
Correct.
Now what I do with my top is I turn it upside down, and I'm going to put tomatoes in it, and I'm going to put holes on the side, and I can plant from the top or the bottom,
mm-hmm.
right? So you can have cascading, and the tomatoes or the thing could come out the bottom.
Man, you getting technical, because now that adds in more oxygen to the roots and you're going to get better fruit.
But not technical in the sense that I need more tools, because all you need is a pair of scissors, right?
Uh-huh.
And you're ready to go. The third is this. Buy a bag of dirt. If you like me, you're trying to find a discount bag of dirt. If you're growing things like beets and carrots and potatoes, you can stand a bag up.
And just put them right in.
Right on its vertical plane.
Mm-hmm.
If you grow in lettuce or tomato plants or small plants out of it, you're going to lay the bag flat.
Yeah.
You don't need to open the bag and expose the dirt. You just need to put holes in to plant your seed.
That is correct.
That way, when your landlord comes, your landlord will see that you have not made any invasive actions in their property or their land. You can move these things with you if you have to move locations.
Or you can contact a woodworker like myself. We build raised beds,
right.
So we can customize them any size that you want. The ones that I normally do are 4 foot long, 2 foot wide. You can fit anywhere between 8 and 15 mature plants inside them.
Right, and what I like is the idea of small, short, stackable planters that I can move quickly in my car if I have to.
Yes.
Yeah, and so you can grow even without land. I want to suggest to parents, people with children, people minding children, this is a great project. With your children, to show them how they can become more self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
And it teaches empathy and critical awareness and mindfulness. But I got some text, and let's start here. This person says they've learned recent prostate cancer.
Yes.
Dear men, eat your pear. Eat it. Thank you. We love y'all. Another text, Ms. Green, do you know of the tactic of adding hydrogen peroxide to the soil?
Yes, it adds in more oxygen to it. It's also antibacterial and antifungus, so it takes away all the bad elements in the soil whilst adding in extra oxygen to the roots.
All right. Now, the text goes on to say monkey tamarind is eaten by some tribes. But the question is it eaten in the brown stage or is it eaten in the green stage, right?
Yeah.
And so we just call it monkey tamarind, but I don't think we realize that it had another name. Okay, Texter, let's go. You got 30 seconds. Caller, you got 30 seconds. You're on the clock.
Yeah, even I just need him to show this number and his company name again so I could get for them, please.
Hold on. So, say that again?
He wants the company name and number.
For what company?
for
you mean for the guest?
Yeah.
Would you like to share your contact?
That's no problem. I am Eden Farming Club. I'm located on Facebook. You can find me as Philip Davis Jr. on Facebook as well, and I will give away my number. My number is 426-8037. What I do is I come to your yard and I give you a consultation. I show you where you can grow certain vegetables. You can incorporate them inside your lifestyle living.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And then this texter says, avocado leaves contain quercetin? I have to research that.
I'll research that, but most of these trees, you get more nutrients from the leaves and seeds than the actual fruit itself.
Yeah.
So whilst they're not in season, you can boil the leaves and use those in cookings and teas and get the nutrients that you need.
In fact, over the summer months, I was promoting to home growers and backyard farmers to not necessarily pull everything up now that it's getting hotter. Just because it's not bearing fruit doesn't mean it doesn't have edible parts or value.
Exactly. But also, whilst they're in the ground, the roots will aerate the soil for when you want to pull them up for the next plant. And the actual plant itself above ground is shading the ground and protecting it from the sun.
Absolutely.
So, absolutely.
Okay, so the text asks, have you ever tried to grow a cocoa tree before?
I thought you meant
cocoa plum tree, boss. That's what you're talking about. Better be talking about cocoa plum.
Oh,
you didn't talk about anything else but cocoa plum.
I thought
tree.
They meant like the chocolate cocoa.
Oh no! Oh, is that what you meant? Because they didn't add an A. I thought they meant the other cocoa.
I stay away
from
that.
But chocolate can grow here.
Yes, it can.
And I think chocolate is being grown here, and a very small another thing for my Andrus people to think about seriously. Right, the potential and viability of chocolate production in the country. Another text. Can you post your growing on ideas on Facebook so I can use them? Thank you. And it says, good morning. Why do you not ask the government to... Man, Texter, why would you even word this like this? The person is asking if We need an investigation into the close circle of companies that share the $800,000 of weekly funds to feed the Bahamian people. And can we ask them to donate some of those millions of dollars that they must have made towards agriculture in the Bahamas? Well, see, here's what happens when we don't have clear lines of communication from the state to the people. We may not think it's necessary from the position that we're in, but the way that we avoid questions like this, right, is to make the information easily available. The way that we avoid accusations of fraud and skullduggery is to make the process transparent and the information possible. So, Texter, let's not be like that, man. But we will. I will post my growing ideas on my page, On the Clock with Aaron Green. And Mr. Phil Davis Jr., you can find him on Facebook. You can find Eden Farming Club on Facebook, and you can find more growing ideas there. But this conversation isn't finished. As we know that we are facing a global supply chain issue. So we're going to be talking agriculture, I'm sure, for the next 12 months. Our lives depend on it. Anyway, have a great day, Bahamas. I hope you feel smarter now that you know why monkey tamarin itch. I feel safer. So have a great day. And of course, stay tuned because Levon Miller and Unleashed is up next. Thank you so much, Mr. Davis.
Thank you very much.
Network update on the hour. Hello, everyone. I'm Charlene Ferguson. One man is dead, another in hospital after a double shooting on Grand Bahama last night. Police say the men were attacked by a gunman outside of a business in 8 Mile Rock just after 10:30 p.m.
As a result, both males received injuries about the body. EMS later attended the scene and pronounced one of the male lifeless.
Police say the other man is in serious but stable condition. In other news, officials at the Ministry of Works and Utilities have been instructed to probe questionable contracts at the Water and Sewage Corporation, which were signed under the Minnis administration. Current Minister Alfred Sears says the results of that probe will dictate whether that matter will be handed over to police. And Chairman of the Board at the University of the Bahamas, Jonathan Rogers, says they have already selected their successful presidential candidate to replace outgoing University President Dr. Rodney Smith, and that the delay in announcing their choice has been due to matters beyond their control, namely the recent general election and the subsequent change in government. His response comes amid a campaign by the current president to hold on to his job, with Dr. Smith telling faculty he deeply regretted his decision to not renew his contract, which expires next year. Rogers, in his statement, said the overwhelming majority candidate from three finalists selected by the Presidential Search Committee, and that they are working with government in hopes of announcing its decision soon. Those three finalists were previously identified as Dr. Ian Strawn, Dr. Eric Rowland, and Sir Anthony Seldon.